Hello, everyone. This is Rico, and you're about to listen to Treks in Sci-Fi. This is show 936. It is June 9th, 2024. We've got a special show for you this week. I had the chance and pleasure to talk to three gentlemen earlier this week over Skype who worked on a project called Space Command, specifically Space Command Redemption, which is the latest movie that's out. You can see that on Prime, Amazon Prime. There's my dog chiming in. And anyway, it was a great interview. Talked to Mark Scott Cree, who is behind the project. He's worked on a lot of sci-fi projects. Also, Ethan McDowell, who's one of the actors involved in the show. And also, Doug Jones, who you will know from Star Trek Discovery, many other projects, and is also in Space Command. So that interview is coming up here in a minute. One little comment about this interview. I was having a little trouble connecting up with Ethan McDowell for the show. So early on in the podcast, you'll sort of get a fade out and a fade in. And when Ethan could join the show, I had to sort of switch gears. And I think Mark was in the middle of talking, and you'll get it. I'll put a little bumper music in or something during that point. I don't think there's too much loss there in terms of, you know, it was a quick brief. I had to jump to get Ethan into the call, and yeah. So all that said, it's a great interview. We talk about a lot of different topics, obviously Space Command and other things, and just really, really great talking to these guys, and I hope you guys enjoy it. That is about it. I will come back at the very end and give you guys a little bit of further feedback on things, but here goes the interview. And by the way, I'll just play, to open the show today, I figure I'll play one of the trailers to Space Command. Luna. That's Luna. Isn't she adorable? All right. Here we go with Space Command Redemption.
The soar up there, that's what it's about. We fly. That's what we cameras do.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the first of what will soon be legions of contented synthetic workers. We suffered a catastrophic incident at one of our mining facilities in the asteroid belt. And in the chaos that followed, one of our pieces of equipment suffered a serious malfunction and has gone missing.
We're kicking in the thrusters. Lieutenant Bradbury, match our speed.
Yes, sir.
I do not yet know what the ship might do if provoked.
You speak as if it were alive.
On occasion, machines are.
You've got them in your sights! Go after it!
You should not have saved my skin, Jack.
He was counting on your humanity.
You doubt that I know my duty, Captain. You put it in your report!
You put that in yours.
This is suicide.
That's the only way that we can rescue those hostages.
Stand down!
You'd vaporize everybody on Earth?
Our orders are wrong.
Slave revolts tend to go badly.
You let all your people die.
Even when faith is shaken, one can always hold on to hope.
This is Rico, and this is Treks in Sci-Fi. We have on the line today with us a couple of guests, hopefully three here soon. Mm-hmm. But we have Mark Cree, or do you go by your full middle name, Mark?
Either is fine.
Okay. Doug Jones, hello.
Hello, hello.
And we're here to talk about Space Command Redemption. Mm-hmm. And you guys are... So give me a little background to begin with, Mark, and both Mark and Doug, about how the project came about. I know there was a Kickstarter, I think, But give me a little background on where it began.
Sure.
Why you went that route with it. And it seems to be one of the things people do these days. But yeah, I'd like to hear that.
Well, I've been a professional writer since I was 19 and writing for TV since I was 22 or 23, hundreds of hours of produced credits. And I was very lucky. I worked on a lot of very iconic shows, and I'm very proud of my body of work. But I was also involved in conversations where the heads of the sci-fi network said things like, I just don't understand Babylon 5. I tried to watch it. I don't understand it. Or I don't understand Sliders. And this is the head of the network. And that's the person who ultimately has the say over what they say yes to and what they say no to. Now, fortunately, it's not the current head of the sci-fi channel, but it was back in the day. So a few years ago, I noticed that all the science fiction TV shows and movies I was seeing were very dystopic, very dark and nihilistic. And they basically, the message was, no matter what you do, the future is going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was a very disempowering message. I thought that, you know, the original Star Trek was done during Vietnam, during riots in all the major cities. The cities were burning, but Gene Roddenberry could still put out the message, we can be better, we can do better, and we can create a future worth living in, and inspired millions of people around the world to build that future. And we don't live in a perfect world, but certainly the world is better for having had that message put out there. And so I wanted to do a show, a space-going show, without being rose-colored glasses or Pollyanna, that would be a hopeful vision of the future, that basically would say, if we reach across boundaries and barriers, if we trust each other rather than hide in our fear or be manipulated by our fear, we can create a future worth living in for us and our kids and our grandkids. And so I didn't want the networks to have a say over whether or not this would reach the audience, so I tried to raise money, which I'd never done before, and it's so far so good. Got my own studio. We just finished shooting hour six of the 12-hour season, and I met Doug, and he was incredibly generous in lending his talents. I wrote the role of Doran Evans specifically for him. If he'd turned it down, there just would have been a blank spot on the screen saying this should have been Doug Jones. But, you know, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Doug.
Well, I think anyone else could have played it, sure, but I don't think I'm that special. But thank you, Mark. Mark and I met at the Saturn Awards, and he complimented my outfit. Mm. And
that's a good start always. Right.
That's
a good
start. I was wearing a fabulous long coat. Yeah. So then after the show was over that night, he had won an award and came back around and kind of figured out who I was finally. And because he had a connection with Guillermo del Toro. You've been writing for a book of his, right, Mark?
He and I were writing the Cabinet of Curiosities book. And yeah, so we were talking, Guillermo and I were talking a lot about you. And of course, I was an enormous fan of your body of work, not just what you've done for Guillermo, but many of your other roles as well. For the modern equivalent of slaves back in the Roman Empire or in other times and places. And the notion of many, many times, particularly for financial gain, people, or for power, people dehumanize some group of the population, whether it's transgender, whether it's, you insert name here, you know. And so I used synthetics, the notion of synthetics, as my stand-ins for anyone who's dehumanized, whether it be the homeless or whomever. And ultimately, our hero, played by Ethan McDowell, he has to understand, he's sent to stop Doran Evans and his followers. Doran Evans is essentially freeing, he's the only, because of an accident, he's the only synthetic who doesn't have an inhibitor chip. He doesn't have to obey. And as a result of that, he steals an alien spaceship and starts liberating all the synthetics throughout the system. So it's basically a slave uprising, and our hero seems to stop him. And ultimately, he has to look at the issue of, is our hero serving the wrong master, essentially serving evil rather than being on the side of good. And all of us, I think, in our daily lives, if we really kind of open our eyes, have that question of, okay, what are our actions leading to? And you have to sort of, I think, to be a moral person, you have to take moral responsibility for what you're doing. And if you see suffering, if you see despair, if you see inhumanity, you have to take action, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, very well said. Sorry, I paused out for a second. I was trying to get Ethan into the call. We've got maybe.
Yeah, sorry about that.
There he is. Hey. Hey.
Technology. Hey. We love it. We love technology. Yes.
And I think it's our best friend. That the paths that Doug and Ethan took to be in Space Command were radically different. With Doug, he decided that he would star in a bunch of incredibly classic movies and TV roles to get on my radar, and so I would cast him. With Ethan, we had a worldwide talent search, and because I thought, I knew I was casting famous actors like Doug, like Bob Picardo, and I thought, and Mira Furlan and Bill Mumy and so forth, and I thought, let's have a worldwide talent search so that anyone anywhere in the world can audition for two of our leads. Because normally in Kickstarter campaigns, people get walk-ons, like they might get a line. But I thought, well, why not give him the entire show? And so we got 7,000 inquiries, 1,200 videos, which we winnowed down to. And then we had callbacks, and Ethan won the role of Captain Jack Cameron. We cast about 9 actors in total in various roles. And God, I'm so glad. I mean, when you talk about people with great hearts, I mean, here's two of them. I mean, I'm just the beneficiary of wonderful people.
That's great. That's great. So what an intro for you, Ethan, right?
I guess so.
Just say thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
Yes.
And I'm signing off.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's hard to top. Yeah. So Ethan, maybe since you just joined, tell us a little bit about your, you know, starting in this production and a little bit about what you thought about it to begin with, maybe what your, you know, expectations were to some degree. And I'm also curious, Mark and everyone, the time frame of what you've done so far in filming Space Command, and then what, you know, the future holds, obviously, too.
Sure.
Yeah. So go ahead, Ethan, and your initials.
For me, just as Mark was saying, it was just kind of, you know, a shot in the dark. You put a audition tape in and kind of cross your fingers and hope for the best. And then how they had it set up is that you could technically see every single audition. It was on a big list, and you can see everybody who's going for the role that you want, and everybody's going for the role for Lieutenant Bradbury as well, or Cadet Bradbury at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just, for me, it's just kind of crossing your fingers, hoping for the best. And sure enough, they whittled it down, and I was the guy for the job. Mm. But it was interesting because for me, I made it to the top 20 of this thing, and then I fell off the list. So I didn't make the top 5.
Mm. Yeah. And then what happened was we had callbacks for those 5 guys, and it just wasn't the right thing. It just wasn't clicking. And I thought, well, let's go back to that handsome blonde guy and
all right.
And so he called you back in, because I thought, you know, it's just like, I just, and you were terrific, and particularly with Brian McClure, who plays Lieutenant Bradbury. And by the way, Brian is now on that HBO movie that he just launched with Jessica Lange. He plays
the great Julian Hall.
Wow, he's moving up in the world. But we cast the two of you together, and when we auditioned you together, you guys had such great chemistry, and so that was terrific. That was really fun. Go ahead.
When you shook my hand, you and Elaine, because we met, and then that day, Rick, they decided to say, well, are you willing to go to San Diego Comic-Con? And I'm like, whoa, wait, what do you mean? They said, well, we're going to have a big panel. We're going to announce you and all the other winners, and it was just kind of a fun situation to be kind of shot out of the cannon, it felt like.
Especially when it seemed like you were maybe not going to be there and maybe not getting it. Yeah, it's happened to me in the past with job opportunities where and then you get a call a few weeks or months later and they say, well, you know, something's changed, and you're maybe, you know, that's luck or whatever you call it. But
it shifts gears and it all works out.
And then it becomes, you probably, Mark, you would probably say, and maybe Doug as well, you know, it seems like, you know, well, why were we looking anywhere else? You know, and then it all, you know, when it comes together, then you go, you know, it's just great. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. So Mark, what exactly have you filmed so far? I mean, I watched the Redemption film and approximately it was about 2 hours, right? Running time. So that is, do you consider that one whole thing, or is it episodes? And then I looked online, and there looks like there's a plan for maybe 12 total episodes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll walk you through it exactly.
Sure.
Because the great thing about television is that the writers run television. The writers run drama and comedy, and so they have the power. The showrunner at the top is almost invariably a writer slash producer. And mm-hmm. so I was able to shape this series very much the way I wanted it, having written for so many shows. And so I basically, looking down the road and seeing the possibilities of how to market it, I knew it would be a 12-hour season, and I structured it as 2-hour stories that could be split down the middle as 1-hour episodes. So it's basically 6 interlinked stories that create a series-long arc that covers about 200 years through 5 generations of all these different characters. And so Redemption is essentially the first 2-hour episode. And we did a prequel that where we've combined the radio play and the graphic novel to be an animatic. So that's sort of a prequel that takes place 30 years earlier and then ends just where Redemption starts. Then during the pandemic, we shot a 2-hour bonus episode called Ripple Effect. And then we just finished shooting Forgiveness, which actually comes right after Redemption in the chronology. And we've started shooting the next 2-hour episode, Great Solar War. And then after that is a 2-hour story called Empire. And then after that is a 2-hour story called Mousetrap. And that finishes the season. But this is all part of a larger goal of doing 6 series under the title Showrunners Network, that where I'm creating shows with the creators of Farscape and The Expanse and the new Rod Serling series and so forth. And all of my friends, my wonderful collaborators who are my actors, I'm creating an ensemble that I want to basically be in everything I do, because who wouldn't want to work with these amazing men? And, the idea essentially is utter megalomania, where I can, do TV shows and movies and not have to ask permission of anyone, because my fans know that what we're doing is quality and what we're doing is meaningful. And so as a result, I don't have to ask some moron at a network, not to disparage executives, but you see, here's the thing. And I'll be very brief because I don't want to monopolize, but it isn't that executives are stupid. That's some are. It's true. Some are. They don't know how to dress themselves or whatever. But most of them are very smart, but their objective is different than a writer. My objective as an artist is to create something of profound meaning and profound truth and originality that will reach an audience and ideally might change their lives for the better. That's mm-hmm. my goal. Their goal, because they're employees of a corporation, is to make money for the corporation, for the shareholders. Now, when the property does that, when the show or movie does that, then they're in alignment. But when something is of quality but doesn't scratch that itch for whatever reason, then it ceases to exist, or it's canceled, or it never sees the light of day. So it isn't that they're stupid necessarily, it's that they are serving a different objective.
Sure.
And there's nothing, and of course, without being able to make money, nothing is going to go anyway. There's no machine, there's no conveyor belt. But I don't want to ask permission of someone who has a different objective than I do.
Yeah, I can understand that difficulty. I mean, Doug, I guess a question to you, since you've kind of worked in different productions, right? You just finished Discovery, which I love, by the way, and I very much enjoyed Action Saru. So what is your, how does it feel when you're working on something like Mark is describing and doing versus a Star Trek series or a different project? Is there, how is it easier? Is it harder? What is your feelings when you're on those different productions?
Well, honestly, taking on a character is taking on a character, no matter what it's living in, no matter what kind of product it's living in. But the difference that you notice is budget and time. Yes. and also layers of decision makers. The bigger studios, the bigger networks have layers of decision makers. And so notes come from all kinds of people that aren't your director. So in an independent situation, I really do love the independent spirit and what an artist can do, what a writer can do, what a director can do, on their own time and on their, with their own story, and tell their own story how they want to tell it without being told how to tell their story, to fit demographics or to fit, product placement people or, whatever the concerns are. And there's a lighter more creative attitude on an independent set, I think. We're all there because we want to be, not because anyone's getting rich and famous off of it necessarily. But it's a story we want to help tell. It's a character we want to play. You know, whereas a bigger money job and with all of the, and the press machine that comes with it, and the all that's at stake, and the studio or the network is constantly reminding you what's at stake. Mm-hmm. So there's a heaviness that comes with that. That's like, oh, we better knock this out of the park, or we're all going to lose our jobs. Whatever. You don't have that necessarily on an independent production, which
it's like Mark talked about. What is the objective? What are you focused on? Are you focused on the money and the ratings? I suppose the best is when those things can kind of all come together a little bit, and that there is some freedom there, that's probably a rarity somewhat. Ethan, what is your experience in working in different areas? I looked at your IMDb page, you've worked on some pretty high end productions and stuff. By the way, I enjoyed Doom Patrol, Walking Dead, those things. Right. So what's your perspective on this versus, the independent versus a little bit more, let's call it normal or, mainstream productions?
Sure. Yeah, I think Doug explained it perfectly. Yeah, it is just, there's just so many different moving parts. I mean, for both, of course, but I think for bigger productions, there's especially like coming into a series that like The Walking Dead that's been on forever, you're just kind of plugged into this machine that's already very finely tuned and very oiled, and you just kind of plug in, you do your job is just like what Doug was saying. You build the character, you go through it, and that feels all the same. And then all of a sudden, when the episodes come out, it's a whole different thing because, millions and millions and millions of people are seeing that. And that's what I think is very unique about what Mark and Elaine have built, is that millions and millions and millions of people have actually seen Space Command. But that's all just because Mark and Elaine are, going full speed ahead to try to make this thing have a little whistle, it's sure. But very similar character wise like Doug was saying, you find characters that you really want to play, and then I'm in a little bit different spot than Doug is at the moment. It's funny, like I just kind of take the characters that come my way and I say, all right, oh, this sounds good, I love this story. But sure. I think Mark really built a just something that has heart, so it's very forever grateful to have, a heroic character who actually cares about others and that follows throughout the whole storyline. So,
You're definitely a rebel type of character on in Space Command. I always enjoy, the bucking the system type character. I'm going to save the ship, it's the right thing to do versus the following, the orders situation. Mm-hmm.
Follow the heart.
Exactly.
And, it's not being a rebel just to be a rebel. It's actually trying to be a moral person in an imperfect universe. And by the way, when you asked Ethan the question of, how is it to work on Space Command versus normal productions, I think from now on we'll just call Space Command an abnormal production, which I think both of my friends would agree with that one.
It's interesting, though. There's certainly, and I know all three of you have seen this, obviously, in action, there certainly has been a trend of over the last several years, people can do these things in their basements to some degree, all the tools of software and technology, like we were talking about early on, it's created this idea and sometimes these things, think about I don't know if it's a valid comparison, but think about Blair Witch Project or even the recent Godzilla movie that, wasn't a mega budget,
Godzilla Minus One. It's a great movie.
It is a great movie. It shows just the writing there is I've always been a fan of good writing, and that's if you don't have that, if you don't have good characters and you don't have good writing, it doesn't matter how big your budget is. And I think not to use the, I kind of hate general terms, but not to use the Hollywood name of, there's a little bit of, I think they're starting to see that with some of these big productions, even now this summer, that are coming out that aren't quite, people aren't necessarily going. But anyway, I'm trying to look back at my list here.
Well, that's fine. Sure.
I'm going to go back to one question that I always want to know when you're doing something like this for each of you. Did you guys grow up enjoying this kind of stuff, sci-fi and these genres that you're finding yourselves in? Or was it something that happened later in life? I don't know. Start, Mark, I'm assuming you kind of grew up in
I was always a weirdo. In fact, I recently had my elementary school reunion the day after my high school reunion. And it was these people. I knew all the people at my elementary school reunion. I hadn't seen many of them for maybe 60 years or something. And they reminded me of that when I was a kid, my stepfather made me my own spaceship out of apple crates and like wooden crates, and inside there were Air Force surplus controls and a row of lights that lit up and a telegraph key and a porthole with a shot of Earth out the window. And I would give tours of the solar system to kids in my neighborhood. So I invited some of my friends from elementary school to come to my studio where there were, you know, spaceship sets that lit up and all this stuff. And they looked around and they said, "My, you have not changed one bit. You know, you have followed your dream." And it was true. And so I've been a science fiction geek since as long as I can remember.
Well, isn't there that famous line, something that if you work with, or if you work in something that you love, you never really work a day, something like that. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but
yes.
Doug, what about you? You've obviously had a long career in this genre area. Is this something that you were very a fan of and passionate about when you were growing up, or did you just kind of slip into that area?
I think I would call myself more of a casual fan who kind of got like there was a vacuum that sucked me into this world.
Yeah, the force is pulling.
The force was with me for sure.
Yeah,
I grew up watching sitcoms and variety shows. If it was musical, if it was funny, if it was toe tapping, that's what I gravitated toward. So now that I'm wearing, you know, have a 38 year career under rubber bits going, that's a surprise to me. But what the sitcom world gave me was a sense of humor and whimsy that I can take into darker roles with me. Mm-hmm. And being a tall, skinny, goofy guy, with a mime background from my college days, the creature effects people just come on now. They saw that I was a palette to build on that wouldn't get too bulky, and I knew how to move in it. Mm-hmm. And then you take the actor's heart, give me a role. I want to do all the investigation that an actor should do. What are his wants, needs, loves, fears, all the things that an actor needs to discover about their character. Add to that the physicality, and it became a really good fit for me to be in the horror, sci-fi, comic book, fantasy genres. Mm-hmm. So. But I would say, again, even though I was a bigger fan of sitcoms and variety shows, I also saw Star Trek, the original series, on the network when it was airing for the first go when I was, you know, 6-7 years old. Wow. And looking at that and thinking, wow, there's the world of possibilities that science fiction brings. That was fascinating to me. And that did make me go outside at night in the summer in Indiana and look up at the stars and wonder what else was out there. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is similar. I grew up in the Midwest, or I live in Michigan, so it's very similar. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a little telescope when I was, you know, 8 years old and looking up at the stars. What about you, Ethan? Is this something new to you? Were you a fan? Did, you know, are you do you have books of Isaac Asimov on your shelf? What's your story?
Well, I grew up in Wyoming, so I was looking at those same stars almost that you're looking at. But yeah, I was a
more stars there though. You can see, you know, you guys have more big sky, you know.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But yeah, I had a little telescope and all of that stuff too. But for me, like thinking about being like an astronaut and all of that, sure, as a kid. But then that faded quick. And then I have an older brother, and my older brother and I would get all our buddies together and start making short films. So that's kind of like where the whole thing with just acting in general took off. And then once I moved out to Los Angeles and started trying to take it serious is when like more roles came along. But I think a lot of the roles I had early on were kind of sci-fi. Like I did a short film that was made into a feature shortly after, but I was just running around the desert, the California desert, in a big suit that kind of looked like Boba Fett kind of. Just running around punching bad guys and all that stuff. So it kind of started that, but that was never really, you know, as serious as things that have unfolded now. But yeah, always a fan, but now it's more exciting to get to play in it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, yeah. It's always amazing to me because of there's such a preponderance of this stuff nowadays of genre material. You know, those are the movies we're seeing, you know, based on these themes, comics, you know, very imaginative fantasy, science fiction, where it's just become, you know, like the old Westerns were, right? When there was, you know, these series and people keep saying maybe this will die down and other genres will come up. But I mean, obviously you need to go where the work is, but there's obviously a lot of that work. And Mark, you've done a ton of stuff over your career. Would you go back to with what you're working on in Space Command, would you go back to potentially working on, let's say, the other side of that, a production that was going on, or, you know, in some role, perhaps? Or...
Well, I was going to mention to Doug that, you know, we've acquired something like 30 spacesuits from different productions, and two of the recent acquisitions are from the Red Skelton show and the Carol Burnett show. The Carol Burnett show is Gold Lame, so we might be able to, like, have an intersection of the variety that you love. But the answer with that is, I was a producer, writer-producer on a show called Lazarus Man that Robert Urich starred in. It was a Western series that Turner did. And I very much enjoyed writing Westerns because they're operatic, like science fiction is. They deal with archetypes. They're larger than life, and they're on a big canvas. But I've also, you know, written comedy professionally. I've written animation. I've written mysteries. I mean, the whole gamut. Because the main trick, as Doug was saying, as an actor, it's you try to find meaning. You try to find, you dig into whatever the material is, and you find the meaning for you and the truth that you can then project. And whether it's one of my bosses once referred to me as a method writer, and I think it's true. But science fiction, the reason I love science fiction is because science fiction, unlike most of the other genres, science fiction presents not only characters and story, but a universe. And you can go in so many different tributaries down in that universe. And Star Trek, you can go with any number of different characters. Star Wars is the same. You know, it always allows you to not just take that individual story, but start to fantasize and think about the larger, strange universe that you're put into. And that's not the same as with a Western or a mystery show. They're much more presenting story and character and milieu, but not a fresh universe of speculation in that way. Science fiction affords me a lot more toys to play with.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, it's as a writer, you probably want as big a canvas or as big of, you know, use your imagination as much as possible. You know, there's something to be said for doing different things. You know, that's at least me personally. I think a lot of people out there feel this way a little bit, is that, you know, there's always the moaning and groaning is of, oh, there's, you know, this is just something we've seen before, you know, with some of, you know, these sequels and adaptations that they do. And there seems to be a little bit of resistance to some of that, you know, so doing something independent. So are you, to get a little bit more towards Space Command again?
Sure.
Are you still, I know you did a Kickstarter to begin with. Is there still, just to let the audience know, is that going to happen for these other episodes, or yes, what is your plan going forward with that?
Essentially, I've raised over $4 million so far, and still counting. In fact, in the last 2 days, I raised $175,000. We find financing one of two ways. One is through crowdfunding, which we're doing ongoingly. We're about to launch a campaign for Great Solar War, the next Space Command episode, on June 15th. But I also sell investment shares for $7,500 each in Space Command. And we've just started offering for the Showrunners Network, which includes Space Command and five other series and a feature. Those shares are $100,000 each. So I've had to train myself to be a businessman. I'd never raised money before Space Command. I didn't know I had the knack, but apparently I do. But, you know, it's like more and more, I think, writers are having to become entrepreneurs because, you know, they have to find ways to market themselves because, for instance, now if you sell a book to a publisher, if it's not marketed as a bestseller, you pretty much get no promotion. And so what's the difference between having a reputable publisher put out your book or just publishing it on Amazon yourself, where you get 90% of the money? You get much more money that way. And if the publisher's not promoting your book, what exactly are they doing? You know, right. and now with you know, over 500 comedy and drama series on all these different platforms, it's very hard for even a show from a major network and studio to get on the radar. I mean, Star Trek, of course, is a huge IP, and I'm very glad that Doug got Discovery, because first of all, he was terrific in it, as he is in pretty much everything he does. but also, you knew, Doug, that when you were cast in Star Trek Discovery, that people would be watching it. You know, I mean, you know, whatever happened with it, you would have eyeballs.
And almost sometimes not to jump in, but the sometimes a little too much watching of, like, well, yeah, picking, you know, the, you know, there's, with what you're doing, you know, is Star Trek obviously has, which I love, which is why I started the podcast to begin with, actually, back when Enterprise ended. I said, we need to keep Star Trek alive. That was, you know, my start, but, but you're right. It's, there's a lot of eyes on that, and it's a good thing, and it can be, you know, somewhat not a good thing sometimes too. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, but it does put you on the map. And when I was a kid, I realized from the examples of the writers on Star Trek and Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, you could write one episode of one show and that could make your career. It certainly did with City on the Edge of Forever with Harlan Ellison. It certainly did with many of the writers that Rod Serling was working with on Twilight Zone. Kick of the Can by George Clayton Johnson on Twilight Zone. If he had never written another word, he still would have been viewed as one of the great writers of all time because of that incredible script. Mm-hmm. And so there's a great opportunity to really punch through in a major way. You know, if you're writing a short story or a book, people have to come to that. They have to open it up. There's work involved. TV just comes into your house. It flows out like lava. And so you get to reach so many people. And, and Doug, it's so funny because now that you're much more public and people know what you look like now. For many years, you were able to be anonymous. Now, of course, I think it's a little harder for you to move in the world, I assume. But you know, that's your own fault for being so brilliant.
I can't live up to these compliments. Thank you.
It's those red carpet things when he's in those suits, like he was talking about, that they actually see his real face, you know, instead of whatever character he was playing at the time.
Yes. But I think you will see something in the three of us that I want to point out, which is all three of us are authentic, are genuine, have a kindness and a humanity and an empathy. This is why I love working with these two actors. It's a joy. They're my friends. I get to play with my friends, you know, and Guillermo del Toro, all these great people I've gotten to work with. I mean, they're coming from a great love of what they're doing, and it shows, and that's why it's good. You know, we see that this is an enormous opportunity to create something that makes our life meaningful. And it's such an honor. And so I'm very glad. I mean, that I've had this wonderful gift of these two wonderful people.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I just, as a personal note, I feel I work with people that I, you know, like and respect and are kind, like you say, that I've always told people. I've had some other job opportunities where I like who I'm working with. And I always tell them, until I don't like who I'm working with, I will stay where I'm at. Why would I want to take the chance to go somewhere? And, you know, you guys work in a different area, but the point is, I think the abilities that you know, people bring to their different roles and their tasks and their craft, you find out whether someone's genuine, like you said earlier, Mark, it's difficult to hide, I think, these days more than, you know, it used to be, perhaps.
Yes.
You know, I think sometimes I think there's too many things that come out online that I don't want to know about. But I guess, where are we at for time? I know we had about an hour. We got about maybe 5-10 minutes left. Let's see. I've covered that on my list. Is there a specific, I guess, Mark, I know you talked about what your plans are for Space Command, and you mentioned some other productions.
Oh yeah.
Do you have anywhere like any kind of an outline on when these things are going to be released and timing and things like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, as Ethan knows, the Forgiveness was shot very quickly and presented no problems at all. I'm joking. Right.
that sounded a little late. Yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's but seriously, the first 6 hours, as I said, of Space Commander, we've completed shooting them. Now Forgiveness is in post. We're putting in the visual effects, sound mix, all that stuff. So it should be a matter of months to have that done and available to people. We've started offering a box set of the first 6 hours of the show, plus the prequel that'll be available within the year, I'm sure. And our plan is to shoot the remaining 6 hours of Space Command this within the year, and we're on track with that. And we're going to shoot the pilots for the other five series. We're going to be launching campaigns very, very soon for that. And we're shooting my wife's film now. We have a studio. It's great. We've got three sound stages filled with spaceship sets and giant robots and aliens. And the fun part is I'm at a point in my life where I don't have to prove myself, but I'm still extremely ambitious. And Doug and Ethan both know that when I look at them, I see exactly where the show is going. I know, you know, I once took a photo with them and the rest of the cast, and I said, here I am with my life-size action figures. And, So the plan is that ultimately we will be a full studio making multiple series and features simultaneously. And I think we're pretty much there now. And so there'll be a lot coming out over the next year or so.
I noticed that. So Redemption is on Amazon, right? I think is one platform you put it on, at least.
Yeah, it's on Amazon and Google Play and Tubi. It's on several. Okay. But and my distributors were just at Cannes selling it worldwide. So waiting to hear back on how that went.
Okay, are you going to do the same with these other episodes? Is that going to maybe change a little bit?
We're going to see. We've already been approached by a distributor who wants to pick up the entire season when it's done. And the ultimate goal is to ultimately team with the major streamers, the major studios, as our partners for distribution and promotion, where they don't really have a say in terms of an artistic say, but they do bring considerable money to promotion and distribution. So ultimately we want to make enough of a dent where they become aware of us as being profitable and being desirable so that we can, that was why I decided to create a slate of series, not just one. And so it's, my mentors, you know, Ray Bradbury and Guillermo, of course, and Rod Serling were all extremely ambitious men who wanted to work in numerous media and succeeded at that, books, TV shows, movies. And so those were the guys who shaped me and my ambitions. So that's the plan. So, and I don't mean to monopolize the conversation.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Well, to give Doug and Ethan a little voice here, one of the things I always love to ask when guys have worked on different productions or I've interviewed is anything that stands out from working on this project in your mind, any special scenes that were either fun or went a different direction, anything you want to point out from the, you know, let's call it stories from the set type of thing. Doug, I guess you could go first.
I'll start. Sure.
Okay. Anything. Well, yeah, go ahead.
A lot of my scenes were with the wonderful and talented Robert Picardo.
Exactly.
And you might know him from Star Trek Voyager. Doing scenes with him, he is such a grounded and wonderful actor who is in the moment and not delivering lines, but delivering a real life back and forth, a moment. And so getting to play with him, and I was the one who was a machine, a robotic, android that he's repairing after an accident, and they were going to trash me, but he kind of like quietly, secretly rebuilt me and did not put my inhibitor chip in. So he's kind of like my ally, my friend, and we do actually grow a friendship. There's a later scene with the two of us where he's giving me his whole backstory where he's kind of reflecting on his life, on what he believes in, and tells me about the loss of his wife, right? That was his wife.
Yeah.
In this very heartfelt monologue that he delivers, where tears came, and here's an android listening to him with all the compassion in the world that could be drummed up. It was such a lovely connected moment of humanity between a man and a machine, really. Another moment I would like to mention about Ethan McDowell, who's sitting right here, is when you meet Ethan in person, he is so humble and so kind, and you'll notice if you're watching this on video at all, you'll see this interview. He nods a lot. He slumps. He smiles. Humble, humble, humble as the day is long, and you just want to hug him. Then he enters the scene on set, and here I was going rogue at this point, and he comes onto the scene. He's been assigned to stop me from my revolution of freeing all of the android slaves. Well, he steps on and gives me like a command, and I look around at his entrance, and here stands not Ethan, but this commanding presence of a clean-shaven, square-jawed, staring me right down the middle with a stern look on his face, a perfect form from head to toe in a rubber costume, you know, just like, and I stood there going,
who is this?
And I forgot my next line. I have to talk now. Ethan got me off my game because from person to character, he was a 180, and that's a mark of a true actor who can take on a character that isn't him in real life necessarily. And
very good,
brilliant, beautiful moment.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, Ethan, what do you have to add to that, or either of that scene or something else that happened on set?
For that scene that Doug's talking about, for me, you know, that was the very first, like, day, I believe, that we actually filmed on set. So it was just, for me, I was geeking out. I'm going to be honest, guys. I was geeking out. I was really excited. We had our sets. We had the alien ships. We had the uniforms. But it was just very surreal for me to, you know, be doing exactly what we wanted to do as kids. And it was full of just energy. Everybody, we're doing it. We're making Space Command. But I think for me, overall, I think that just kind of what Mark was saying as well, it feels like a family. You know, you don't get that feeling of being able to plug into set and actually, you know, we've been living we know each other's lives for years now, and it's just really neat to just, you know, consider everybody that's on the set friends. And it feels very good. You don't get that a lot when you're, you know, doing the gig work and getting, you know, you meet a team, like a wonderful crew, and you guys are together for a few months, you know, if it works that way, sometimes a day, and then all of a sudden it goes away. But I feel like with Space Command, it's been something like it's almost worked to the advantage of for how long that we've been crafting this story, that it's we've, you know, created family and friends. It's just a wonderful, wonderful outcome.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. It has to be a pleasure to, you know, have that kind of feeling when you're there. I can't imagine trying to do your job and acting under when you're not happy. It doesn't seem like it would connect, and it must influence performances. I'm not an actor, but it must change things dramatically. And I've always felt like, you know, people talk about chemistry, you know, they'll say they have good chemistry, and to me, Star Trek, I think, has certainly shown this, especially when you end up seeing the people at conventions and things like that, is that they obviously like each other. And it comes through on the screen. So it's very hard. You can't really make that up, I don't feel, no matter even how good of an actor you are. I think there's the human, you know, intuition kind of comes into play, and you say, yeah, that looks real to me. And those guys get along, kind of a thing. Mark, your feelings too, it sounds like, yeah.
There is a certain kind of person that we encounter in our industry, and they're called assholes, and they do show up now and then. But actually, the real reason all of us get along so well on Space Command and now the projects we're doing together, and the reason it feels like a family, the actors, the crew, just everybody, it really is a wonderful feeling on set, is due to a secret weapon I have called Elaine Zikri, who is my wife and writing, directing, producing partner, because she, God knows what kind of slime ball I'd be without Elaine. You know, it's like, it's I met Elaine 48 years ago. We've been married 46 years. As I often say, she's the best part of every day. And she's very, 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 she has incredible warm heart, and she just knits together people in a way that I enormously admire. And so I just kind of follow in her wake and try not to screw things up too badly. And it seems to work out really, really well.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that's obvious. I mean, you know, I really enjoyed the movie. I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Yeah.
You know, there's, I like this idea of being able to do what you guys want to do. You don't have a lot of layers of people to get through to.
None.
You don't have to get every little line, you know, approved by 10 people. I can't even imagine working like that. You were mentioning Harlan Ellison earlier, you know, he was very famous for going and doing talks about, you know, he wouldn't compromise, you know, this is what I write, this is what you're going to do for the show, and, you know, let the chips fall type of thing. I mean, it's, we live in a, you know, kind of a nice age, you know, in a way. People will say things about the times that we live in. You know, there's always good and bad at every time, but I think you gotta try to focus on the good and take advantage of it. And you're taking advantage of the ability to do these projects this way. I mean, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that probably wouldn't have been possible.
It wouldn't have been. Even like 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been. It's the mixture of digital filmmaking, crowdfunding, the cost of everything coming down. And the fact that our studio is in Los Angeles, so that our actors can sleep in their own beds, can be, you know, if they live in LA, which most of them do, and or many of them do at least. So, when I started in television back in 78, you were shooting 35 millimeter. The only way to go, the only game in town was studios and networks. This could not have been possible. But I would much rather be funded by the fans than funded by some corporation that, you know, is less than friendly.
Yeah, I would understand. You know, I think as a, you know, as someone in the public myself, and you know, who enjoys these projects and does a podcast, and it's always amazing to me, you know, with what's happened in some of these recent projects where they've, well, we're just canceling this movie or this show that we've already produced.
Yeah.
And I mean, not to get on to the negative side, but it's shocking to me that I can't imagine pouring, you know, you guys as actors, writers, putting all of your energy into a project and then having somebody just, you know, stop it at the finish line and say, yeah, we're not going to put that out there. And, you know, to have control, I think, is the only, I'm not somebody that would ever like somebody else to do something like that to something right. I worked on. That would be very hard. Yeah.
Well, my objective is to give the writer, the science fiction writer in television, the same artistic autonomy as the science fiction novelist, where you can track a career arc, you can track an artistic parabola, if you will. I mean, we can look at Stephen King and see exactly what he wanted to write over the course of decades. The same with my friend Ray Bradbury. And in TV, many of the best projects of many of the top science fiction writers in TV they've never seen the light of day. And so I'm basically building a machine, not just for myself, but for many others, that will allow. I just wrote a book called Greenlighting Yourself that tells people how to do this exactly like the recipe for a cake. And, you know, I think you just have to take responsibility and do the hard work and the heavy lifting, and it's well worth it. You know, for me, every day is Christmas. I am a happy camper, and just to see these two dear souls on the screen with me and to know that they're part of my world is just remarkable to me. I mean, when I was a kid dreaming of my future, you know, I knew I'd either be some janitor working somewhere for like shit wages, you know, but my big dream was to be exactly this.
And to do what you want and what you enjoy. Yeah.
I'm so honored to work. I mean, actors are my collaborators, as are the DP, as is Dave Edison, my editor. These are my partners. These are my team. And my God, I'm so lucky.
Now, are you, one last thing. Are you, I know you're doing the directing, right, on these and writing also. Is that true for all of the episodes? I'm not quite sure on that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm sort of the lead dog as the writer. Elaine and I write the final shooting draft, and then we direct together because she's a better director than I am. Actually, in truth, she's an actor's director. She studied, she went through drama school. She was an actor director off Broadway, and so she really works well with actors. I'm a visual guy. My degree is in painting, sculpture, and graphic arts from UCLA. I was an artist before I was a writer. I was having gallery shows of my work when I was a teenager. And so this, I'm able to see the visuals very, very specifically in my head. And so I think it's a good match for the two of us. So we write, sure, produce, and direct together. And it really...
Okay. Yeah, actor-wise, it's funny because if you want to, you know, figure out a fight scene, you go talk to Mark. And then if you want to cry, just go talk to Elaine.
Yes.
I felt the same tag team happening when we were filming Spaceman Redemption, that Mark gave us great technical setup and here's what goes where, and then we would play a scene out and then Elaine would step in to give us the acting tweaks that were all the heart and soul bits. It was a good mix with the two. You never contradicted each other either.
That's great.
And also this comes from a certain maturity. You know, when I said earlier that I don't really have anything to prove, it's like I don't need to have my word be like everyone knows that this is coming from me. It's like if Elaine steps in and she's giving a note that makes it better. There was one scene with one actress where it was not going well and Elaine had to come. She was shooting at the studio and I was shooting on location. And I said, get here quickly. And this woman could not act at all. And Elaine whispered in her ear for 10 seconds. And after that, she was terrific. She was like Meryl Streep. And it was like literally the laying on of hands. I said to Elaine, how do you do that? It was amazing. And I, but again, you don't have to work very hard with Ethan and Doug. I mean, it's not work at all. It's just so fun. God, you know, and whereas they come for a few days and we shoot, I mean, I'm looking at their faces 365 days a year, you know, and year in and year out. And fortunately, they're both very pleasant to look at. And it's not a negative at all. It's just positive.
Well, I can't really add much more to this. It's been a wonderful conversation. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it very much. I guess as a sign off, I'm going to try to... This is mostly just going to be an audio show, but I'm going to click record here and see if I can get a bit of final words from each of you, and then we'll end this. And I would love to maybe revisit this at some point in the future when you have more episodes out or whatever you'd like to talk about, maybe one of your other projects. But I guess, Doug, start with you. Any final thoughts, final words on Space Command, except go watch it? Enjoy it.
But yeah, yes. Space Command as a series of movies is a fun science fiction thrill ride, but it also appeals to the intelligent audience. It's poetic storytelling. It is also backed, funded, and supported by the viewer. That's what makes this a very special product. Even doing convention appearances when I'm out there, representing all my career of 38 years, I occasionally get the person stepping up to my table that says, you know, I'm a backer of Space Command. And that sense of ownership and pride that comes with that is a sweet relationship between audience and production. So that's what makes Space Command special for me.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Ethan, any final thoughts here?
Yeah, I think just focusing on Space Command, I think it's neat to be able to see generations of families, like the actual ripple of what happens based on choices. So I think it's just how Mark and Elaine have written it. I think it's a beautiful way of showing what differences in the world and what those choices of each, like whether it's opposing forces or whether it's somebody just trying to get by. Every choice they make will affect their future. And I think that's just a beautiful way to paint a picture for not just sci-fi, but just for storytelling as a whole.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very different approach that's not really done very much in film or television in any way, you know, where this is 50 years from now or 100 years from now, and this has changed. So, and Mark, what else can you say about Space Command here?
Well, the really fun thing working with these wonderful, wonderful people is, you know, the prequel of Space Command starts 30 years from now and ends 60 years from now. The 2-hour pilot of Space Command Redemption is 60 years from now. The next episode, Forgiveness, jumps 3 years. The episode after that, Great Solar War, jumps 20 years, and so forth. So, and ultimately, we cover 200 years going back and forth one way or another. And so you literally see, you know, Ethan and his son and his grandson and his great-grandson. You know, Doug is a synthetic, so he's what we call a viewpoint character. So
Doug always looks like Doug, so, you know.
Right, but he's throughout the entire thing. But you get to see the ramifications of cause and effect, as Ethan was saying. And, you know, so this is Space Command is a dream come true for me. And all I can say is, particularly for Star Trek fans, by the way, we have a lot of Star Trek actors coming in future episodes. Armin Shimerman, Nichelle Nichols, Tim Russ, on and on. And Ethan Phillips, you name it. Many, many, many. I'm even talking to George Takei, and who I've worked with before. So there's a lot of great stuff ahead. And
that's great.
And I will be unveiling it to the world very, very shortly.
That's good. One last thing. What's the best way for anyone who doesn't know or doesn't know how to use Google? Where do they find you? Find Space Command at online.
The real entry point would be my YouTube channel, Mr. Sci-Fi, and okay. Everything can go from there. And okay. And it's not just about Space Command. I talk about science fiction in general, anything from any part of books, TV, movies, anything, because that's sort of how my head works.
Very good. I'll make sure to link it in the show notes and that. I'll send you some information on this once it gets put up, which should be next weekend, I think. But well, hey, guys, thanks very much. This has been wonderful. Very much enjoyed talking to all of you. Love to do it again sometime. Enjoy the rest of your days out there on the West Coast.
Yes.
And,
thank you very much. You too, Rick. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks very much, guys. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye, all.
Transfer of data is complete.
All right. I just want to say thanks again to Mark and Doug and Ethan for joining me on Treks and Sci-Fi talking about Space Command Redemption. Like Mark mentioned, I think during the podcast, you can see clips and get more information about this over at Mr. Sci-Fi, which is his channel. Sci-Fi with a hyphen, obviously. Just like Treks and Sci-Fi. Anyway, check out Mark's stuff there. It was, again, a lot of fun talking to these guys. We covered a lot of ground. And you can also see Space Command Redemption on Amazon Prime. Love to talk to him again in the future. Check their stuff out. Again, thanks, guys. Hopefully we'll be able to reconvene and speak again when you get some more of Space Command out there. Really looking forward to more of it. And that's about it, everyone. Take care, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
This has been a Rico Dosti podcast production.